Hello, everyone, and welcome to the challenge Ride or Dies for the premiere. I am Brian Cohn, and to be, as always, is my co-host, Alistair. Ali, how are you?
How am I? Jazzed. I feel like I'm not quite like on a yacht drinking champagne like our friends on the show were in the intro, but I am rejuvenated and refreshed after Challenge USA and ready for a new season of good old regular challenge.
Yeah, it's good to be back. Been a long time off, a whole 4 weeks. So we had that nice time apart. I feel like the challenge documentary definitely helped cleanse myself a little bit of how USA ended. So I was feeling a little bit better coming into the season. But yeah, I think vibes are good. They're okay. It was okay.
Well, you, I don't know if you want to open with this, but you watched last night's episode with people. I was gonna say in a special way. That was weird.
Yeah, I went to the Challenge Mania premiere event. I didn't realize they do their watch parties. The bar is literally a 3-minute walk from my apartment, so I found that out. I'm like, oh, this is just glorious. So Jordan Kalish, he really needs to start working on his planning for where he hosts his Survivor watch parties to make it more convenient for me. But this one was just like right on the block, so it couldn't have worked out any better. And Devin was there, which was a fun time. Got to meet Scott, got to meet his lovely wife. And yeah, it was a good time. It was a good way to watch the show. I don't think I've ever watched a challenge in like a viewing experience before, so it was fun.
We'd have so many questions. So Derek was not there.
Someone that I swear was like his brother or cousin looked like him, but I asked someone and they were just some random dude. So no relation to Derek. I'm like, oh my God, is that Derek's brother? But no relation to Derek. Derek was not there. Only Devin was there for challenge guests.
Oh, interesting. Well, that's great. That's exciting. Did they do any like live content or was like just people watching the show?
Yeah, just a live watch. I think Devin was doing a little meet and greet, taking pictures. No podcast or anything like that afterwards. No like trivia or I think it was like a Halloween theme. I saw a couple people dressed up in costumes or maybe just New York City and people wearing different things in different events. I don't know. But yeah, it wasn't like a live know-it-all type thing or anything.
Well, that's lovely. Too had a run-in with the MTV Glitterati today. I would bet anything that I saw Mike from X on the Beach and the Paramount Plus People on the Beach Compete for Money show walking today in the city. And I was like, I might be one of the only people on earth who can recognize this man.
Did you go up to him? He probably would have been absolutely thrilled to be recognized.
No, of course I'd go to. See, we had this conversation briefly over text. Like, for some reason, I have never had any interest in like meeting any of the people on reality television. Maybe because I famously had such a terrible run-in with Stephen Pishback when I was a fan. But that's a story for another day and another podcast. But that sounds fun, and this must have been an exciting episode to watch because unlike a lot of premieres where it's really just meet the cast. We got hookups, we got strategy, we got upsets. Like, this was a pretty fun first episode.
Yeah, I mean, they did the classic episode zero, which I think now they've done a couple seasons in a row now. I feel like the last two challenge properties, I think they've done, like, an episode zero where it's, like, a meet the cast type thing. Again, they weirdly just do it on, like, a Monday night rather than either, like, right before this or, like, the week before in the same time slot. I never will understand that, but they did that on Monday, which was really more of, like, diving into the rookies, welcoming back some of the vets. So come episode one, we kind of just like jump right in. Like we already had like, you know, Laurel and Turbo fighting on the yacht on the way over. So we were kind of jumping right in to people getting into it. So yeah, I think the episode zero really helped. Because this was almost, if you include that, which a lot of that stuff could have been in a normal premiere. It was really like a 2.5-hour premiere. So they really kind of gave you the full context of who all these new people are and welcoming some people back.
I should explain. I really should have opened up with an apology. The funniest thing, and I don't know if you remember this, but when we wrapped last season, like last week, you were like, I was like, are we doing a podcast on the Untold Story? And you were like, we'll see. And I was like, I'm willing to say I'll show up and do it myself. Right. And then Ryan and I scheduled like 2-3 different times and I had to postpone due to work. And so like, then we aspired to do a pre, then it was like, I was ready to come on all smug and be like, how fortuitous that like everybody else like might have done a thing for this or does a preview or does a draft, we're here being rewarded for our procrastination, and we're going to be able to seamlessly cover the Monday night pre-show. And then I had to cancel on that. So it is my bad that we are here. But like now, you know, you didn't miss anything. You're all up to speed.
Look, if we did a draft, we would have, you know, taken Casey, and that would have gone haywire. We would have had to figure out what we do with, like, people that come in late. Like, did they get rewarded for the, you know, must losing and stuff like that? So it is a little bit of a chaotic feel. This is also giving a little – the only reason why, like, I'm not more optimistic about this season is it's giving, like, early 30 seasons vibes where, like, from this episode, we lost two teams but gained three. And I think for the next couple of weeks, we're going to stay flat if, like, the new teams come in to replace people to get eliminated. So I feel like we're not going to lose anyone for, like, a month. So that's the only thing that's giving me a little bit of trepidation on, like, the season right now.
Interesting. Did we know – so, like, you and I haven't – as I just laid out, we haven't discussed this season because we made multiple times to discuss it, and time got away from both of us. But here's my question. Did we know that this was going to happen? Like, because I'll be vulnerable. I'll come out and say, I didn't know. I'm not like my brother with the mole. I'm not in the Reddit. I don't know what's going on because I don't want to be spoiled. So I didn't even like catch word that the like mercenary best ride or dies were going to be slowly revealed throughout the season / Casey wasn't going to be on the season. I was bamboozled.
No, I had absolutely no idea. I definitely didn't know Casey was being sent home. I definitely didn't know that. If I had to guess, I knew these three teams were not going to be like part of like the first part of the episode. I just thought they all were going to be introduced, like either maybe right before the first daily, or at the very least, all introduced after the first elimination. Like maybe they just got like a first round bye with how they kind of like earned that status. But I didn't think it would be like, okay, here's the first one. And then I guess next week we'll bring in maybe like Anissa, or then the week after maybe Jordan or vice versa. I didn't think we'd be doing this as staggered as it seems like it's going to be.
Yeah, I don't get it. Like, I don't understand.
No, I don't know.
Like, there's like a reward to it. And in fact, it's putting an asterisk on potentially their win. Like, when are Jordan and Anissa going to come in 6 weeks in and then they're going to win and we're going to be like, wow, what a fair shake.
Mm-hmm.
Not that who cares about fairness, but it just, what is the reward? Like, what is the benefit of teasing their arrival?
The only benefit I would say was the intro was very cool. The music blasting, them walking out of the shadows, everyone's reactions. That got me. Like, I was like, oh, this is kind of awesome. I just wish it was like all of
this.
Of
is kind
I
thought of it was awesome.
Like after Bananas and Nani came out, or even if like they should have had, oh, then it's Jordan and Anissa, and then it's, I don't even, who is the 13 that's coming out? I don't remember. They bring them
Darrell
all. I don't know why.
Veronica, how dare
Darrell
you?
And Veronica, how dare I? So stupid. But yeah, I don't know why they wouldn't just make this grand reveal at all. Now let's bring in like these three grand pairs that we're all going to drop into the game. I don't know why we're staggering it. Just bring them all in. Let's go. Just let it run.
Here's my frustration as a challenge podcaster and watcher is like, is it exciting TV? Maybe yes, maybe no. I agree. Like some of it was a little exciting, but the faces, like the fake reactions of people like Laurel being like, how could anyone? Like they all knew they were coming. I mean, I'm happy to be proven wrong by people, but I would be shocked if the audience was genuinely surprised. But generally, I would say, the way information was revealed to us in general this episode was fun narratively, but frustrating strategically. So like, yes, maybe the reveal down in the sand in the zone, which I love, by the way, in the zone is exciting. But from a game perspective, I don't like that people are going to be introduced. It's one thing if you're a sub. It's another thing to just like fully, as you said, have a multiple week potentially by. And like, we'll talk about it, but the way that Johnny and Raven have to make decisions without knowing the mechanics was a fun reveal for us to watch, but extremely frustrating that they don't have this knowledge when they're making the decision.
Yeah. I mean, look, they definitely don't have the exact detail of what's going to go down, but the fact that, you know, okay, we don't know who the other team is. So there's like only a select options that it could be, right? It's like whoever you vote in, maybe they get to pick, and most likely they're going to be picking from the people that you pick from, or I guess they can pick from everyone else that could be picked from, or you can do something like the draw. But there's only like a select number of things that they could do at that point that, like, it was a surprise about what the mechanism that they did with, like, the draw, and the person that wins the draw gets to pick. But the conclusion was always going to be some form of this that you can probably, it wasn't like there was like, took away the person finishing last is going in. It's like, oh, sure. Just kidding. They're actually safe. Like, you knew that wasn't in play. So there was only a select number of options really that was going to come down to for this.
Interesting. I was completely, once again, bamboozled, because I thought it was great strategy on Johnny and Raven's part to call people in, even people that you don't intend to send in, because, and then, you know, spare them. Even though, like, it's not foolproof, but I thought it was a good instinct, and it would have been mine too. I didn't think it was most likely that, oh, the people that you put in who you spare will also go in. I thought it was either going to be, like you said, they get to call anyone out, in which case it's not your fault. Like, they're not more vulnerable because you dropped them in, or the other people are safe and they can only pick from the people you didn't call out, which in which case still doesn't affect Johnny or Raven. Or I thought house vote. As the time went on, I was like, okay, we're not getting a house vote, but I considered that. I did not see a draw of the other three coming. I wish I did, because I was like, oh, four seems like a lot of people to be interviewing. But I think I can't tell how impactful I think it would have been, how much impact it would have had on Johnny and Raven's decision if they knew it was going to be a draw of the other three games. So yeah, I don't think it was like, oh, it might as well have been the same thing.
Yeah, so I mean, I think if they knew this going in, I think the one switch they would do, right, is they wouldn't do Kim and Colleen. I think they would have swapped them out for another vet team. But even then, I think their big thing about wanting to toss them in was like, oh, we just don't want to, like, make it seem like we're only going after the vets. We want at least to toss in a rookie. And I do think we might see a strategy of, like, I guess we could jump right into this strategy of this whole thing is, you know, you pick four teams, like, you nominate four teams. There is one team that you kind of don't want to go in, and then you just play, like, or even like you put two teams you don't want to go in and try to play the odds of, like, okay, I'm going to pick one of those four to definitely go in, and I'm going to keep two that I don't want to go in, and hopefully one of the two of them will pick kind of the sword to force the other team to go in. Like, once, I guess maybe when it gets down more in numbers, that might be something you have to do, but there are, like, risks you can take to try to, like, outsmart this a little bit down the road.
Yeah, I love a draw. We haven't seen it in a long time. I was very excited to see it back. This obviously with a new twist that one team will be able to save another team. Here's the interesting wrinkle, and it's, you know, whatever. This is one of the first seasons in a little while where we're seeing, like, a really formidable rookie class, not just like Big Brother people all joining together, or the veterans taking over or what have you. This is like a really decent mix of what I would call the fringe vets, like the people who have been on one, two, three times, who haven't been able to make inroads, NJ, Michelle, Amber. I think Nelson's ripe to jump in on here. Like the misfit veterans plus the strategic rookies. And, you know, we're in a decent position to see like a meteoric rise of that group. And of course, this mechanism is going to foil that for them. Like in the game where we have the best situation, you might not be rooting for them, but like an interesting strategic group taking hold that's not just like vets dominance mixed with one of the most interesting mechanisms for the underdogs to advance. So it's like, I almost think this is only going to benefit like Devin and Tori and Bananas and Nani, and not like the underdogs, which it would benefit in another season. I'm not making sense. It's late, but like, trust me, I know what I'm saying. Is that good enough for a podcast?
I think normally you're right, but I think because these vets aren't, now I guess with Bananas jumping in, that could change things, but these aren't like the strongest of vets. Or it's like, I think the rookies could, as we saw this week, I think a lot of them could easily win these dailies, and then they can manipulate this to the best of their ability. If anything, I think it kind of opens it up where there is more flexibility, where, you know, you don't have to worry about one of like the rookie teams just finishing last and then that's it, they're just going right in. Like, you have that way to toss more teams in the mix and get other, and maybe get the vets to like take shots at each other, and then it's the team that's going to form cracks amongst them. Like, I think this will kind of help. And I'm also fine that even if the big rookie group could have their power, I don't want them to really have their power. I want them to be able to struggle. I want the bets to, you know, have swings at them. Like, I think this will force the different groups to take shots at each other and internally. And no big group can really ride this all the way to the end because of how the randomness and the variance is going to take place.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how it plays out. I'm sure we're going to have a lot of confusing conversations down the road about it. We didn't do a preview. Any rookies or vets so we haven't seen in a while? Anyone you're excited about? Who stands out here in this first episode?
So, I mean, stands out. Not excited about the scene, but definitely stands out. I was floored to see Turbo back in the mix. I thought there was no chance in the world we would ever see him again. I don't really know why he's back. I mean, he adds like a level of like intrigue, I guess, that other people don't, but he adds a level of intrigue that makes it almost uncomfortable sometimes. Like, he just seems like a genuinely scary person that could just cause bad chaos, not like fun reality TV chaos, but like damaging chaos. Like, the drop of the hat, even like at the end of the episode, Devin makes like a very innocuous joke and it seems like Turbo is ready to like rip his head off. Like, I don't know if he's drumming it up for the camera. Like, I hope he is, because I don't want this to like escalate and like by episode 4 Turbo and his partner being taken out by security because, you know, he's threatening to like destroy someone. Like, I don't want to see that.
Yeah, I'm not going to make any statements on Turbo, but did this remind me of some ghosts of instabilities past we've had on the show? I felt very similar to watching the likes of Abram or Pauly, or, you know, like early CT. I feel like it's been a while since I've been like on edge about whether somebody's like in on what's going on or not. And mm-hmm. Turbo gives me quite a bit of pause.
Yes. I can't get a vibe if he's in on it. I would lean no, honestly, but I mean, I hope he is. But yeah, I was just seeing his name there.
He's not.
Yeah, okay. But seeing his name there on the cast list was very surprising. Always love to see Laurel in the mix. I think she just adds like a level of credibility to a season, just having her there. Because if another team wins, I mean, they beat Laurel somehow along the way to get there, which I just feel like adds extra credence to their win. And if Laurel wins, it's just great to see Laurel win. So I just like seeing her in the mix of, you know, taking the competition to kind of a next level.
I agree with Laurel. I also really think that Jack was the standout rookie of this episode. Like, I really was impressed with Jack's ability to like keep that mole information close enough to the vest. Like, I do think like another reality TV person new to the challenge would have that information and get so jazzed to share it and gossip it and like make a big stink. But Jack keeps it like perfectly, uses it at the right time with Johnny and Raven, and then holds off in such a way that like the rookies who should be putting him in don't mm-hmm. and save him. Like, I was very, very impressed with his reads. I thought he gave good confessionals. I'm excited for the two of them as a pair.
Yeah, I think Jack is great. I think if he keeps up this, I think he could be a standalone character coming back for next season. Absolutely. Obviously, I think Johnny and Raven were both great. I know we got into it a little bit, but I love each of their kind of strategy sessions, the way they were talking. I even loved, I mean, it's kind of like the bar is in hell, but I even just like that Johnny was like, let me, like, what do you think about what I'm saying? Like, not forcing, like, what we should do. He was like, this is what I think. Let me know what, like, just bouncing an idea off, which, again, bar is in hell, but it's, like, great to see him do that. So I love both of them in the mix. I think, you know, them, Johnny's kind of, like, love triangle thing with Nerisse will be kind of very interesting as well, especially with Nelson in the mix. So I think a lot of them will be very, very fun.
I am not understanding the magic spell that Johnny has on women. Like, this is like the third show I've seen Johnny on, and he like gets into a relationship immediately. He did the same thing on People Win Money on the Beach. What is that freaking show called on Paramount Plus? With the Party Shore, Money Shore.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, those all sound correct.
Do you know what I'm talking about? There was a show that some of these people were on. They like did the Shore show. So like Angelina from Jersey Shore was on. Someone from Bachelor in Paradise was on. It's how like Giannina met Blake Horseman from The Bachelor. And they like compete. Vanjie was on.
Yeah.
Whatever. Obviously, I watched it. Yeah. What else am I doing? And Johnny shows up and like he fakes love. Like, that's the problem, is like he shows up and like makes you think apparently that he is in love with you. And then is exactly the way we see him manipulating these women. Like, he says to Raven, like, oh, for the benefit of our team, we should be friends. And she's out here like, oh, yeah, I agree. It's like so we can focus on our team. And then he's saying to Nerys, like, we've got to like keep this on the down low because like my partner's going to be upset. So like he's just like playing people left and right. Mm-hmm. He's on TV playing people and they see it and they feel differently on the show. I don't know. This guy's got everyone under a spell. We'll see how it works out for him. But where Johnny goes, drama follows. So we'll see. I don't know. Great casting for that reason alone.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Here's something obvious. This is a veteran pair. I just have a feeling in my bones, and I was laughing that they go into elimination first, that this is Tori's season. I have no spoilers. I have no, like, people, maybe she goes home next week and people will be laughing at it. She was my first pick overall in my noob draft. I just feel like her and Devin are such a strong, well-balanced pair. We saw it in the elimination tonight. I think they're sort of well enough connected. They're a target, but they're not the biggest target. They have complementary strengths. And here's the thing. This is not our first rodeo. How many seasons of The Challenge have we covered? I would bet dollars to donuts. I don't know what that even means, but I would do it. I bet all my donuts that these ride or dies are going to get tested and split up, right?
Yeah. So we actually have a question about that. And I had a thought off their question from Allie Miller. Just to cut down from the first part of it, because it teed up from Bananas stealing the money from Sarah. But she asks, now 10 seasons later, we have a parallel theme, Ride or Dies. Bananas is back and partnered with Nani. Can either of you guys imagine a world where they do a take the money and run type thing in the final? And I'm more thinking, do you think they'll do a double agents type thing where will the partner be offered to leave their partner at a certain point? And can you see anyone doing that?
So to speak to Allie's question first, yeah, 100%. If these ride or dies go all the way to the final, they would love for Nani and Bananas to have the opportunity to steal and not steal, and that be like the closure to the Sarah Bananas situation, for sure. I think they love, based on what we saw in the Untold Story, they love both of the times they let the partners decide to do that. To go back to your spin on it, yeah, I don't see a world where this isn't getting tested, whether that's if you've worked together to get to the final, but now you are on your own and you can decide if you help your partner or not, like that kind of thing. It's going to happen earlier if there are switch opportunities. There's just no world that we're watching all of these people ride or die all the way through to the final.
Yeah, absolutely. There's going to be something. I think it'll be even, well before the final. I think somewhere along the midseason, there's going to be some mechanism where they have to choose, like, do they share money? Do they have to do something? There's going to be something where the ride or die-ness is going to be strongly put to the test.
And so I even think Tori is poised to win as an individual once, like, I think they're a great team and I have full confidence in her without him. So I feel it.
Yeah, and I mean, like, when Jordan enters the game, I think that'll be an interesting spin to see how Tori does. Does that sink her game? Are they in a good enough place to work together? Do people rally behind Tori to go after Jordan even more? It'll be very interesting to see how, when Jordan and Anissa are in the mix, how that plays, because obviously Tori and Anissa are very close, but Tori and Jordan probably aren't as much. So it'll be very, very interesting to see how that plays out.
You mentioned Raven and Johnny being a good team, being good individually. When I saw Raven show up in that hot dress as her like entrance look. I was like, this is what I want to see in a rookie. Someone who is using every second of screen time. Like, I am on TV from minute one. And I was like, I love this casting based solely on that. And then, yeah, it bared fruit. Like, I think she's going to be great. I'm excited. You know, a lot of veterans are jaded. Like, we used to talk about the reunion looks. Like, the vets started showing up in, like, a sweatshirt and leggings, which we love. But, like, I love a rookie who's, like, here to turn up minute one. So I'm excited. I'm really excited about all of these rookies. I want to know, speaking of rookies, what you think about the big mole lie.
It's a really weird lie. I don't know why. I mean, I guess I can understand why you do it. You know, you come on a show like this and, you know, people hear Big Brother or Survivor and they freak out. So I guess we hear the mole, which is like strictly strategy and lying. Like, I could see freaking out. And I feel like she's probably like, there's no way anyone would know I was on it, but it just feels like the downside. Even just say you're on it and lost. It's like, oh, yeah, I sucked at lying. So I was just like super out early or something like that. I just feel like the risk of getting caught is something that can just blow up in your face even more. So I wouldn't go about doing this.
I just, first of all, if you're not watching the U.S. Mole on Netflix, you need to be doing. What are you doing? Turn the podcast off and go turn it on.
Well, I haven't started. Should we stop recording and then come back? Or
there's so many reasons we should stop recording. But yes, we should. You have to watch that and text me about it. Everyone can at me about the vote. That being said, this is like the people who go on Survivor and are like, I'm a salesman. I'm a lawyer. I'm not going to tell anybody that I'm a logic coach for, like, that's so niche. I'm not gonna tell anyone that, like, I tutor kids in math in case math is important. Like, nobody effing cares. The lie is worse, especially here. And here's what I love. I feel like 5 years ago we would have gotten a confessionals from Jack being like, I watch the mole, I'm a huge mole stan, and I recognize her. And we'd be out here like, how the hell did he recognize her from the mole Germany? I love that the game no longer cares and is willing to say, like, I had a cast list and I Googled her. In which case, it is even more absurd. Either everybody knows and it just nobody cares to talk about it because it hasn't mattered, or literally nobody, Fessy didn't even bother to Google the cast that got announced.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. I loved even when they brought up, like, the airport stuff, flying into the season. I love when they recognize that the show really does start well before the season, continues well after the season, leading up to the next season. Like, this is almost a 365 day type show because of how many people come back and all the connections. So just acknowledge it. Don't make us look stupid. Like, just tell us, like, oh yeah, I Googled this person. Yeah, they hooked up at the airport. And that's why, like, they're coming connection. They didn't meet up at a bar 2 weeks before or something like that. Like, just tell us straight up of what's going on. I think it just adds so much more to it, because then you have people's genuine reactions. They're not just like playing up to a fake story for the show.
Speaking of fake stories for the show, I am so curious about how this season was cast, because I'm really not buying the, like, we picked our partners. I would have loved to see, like, Nam and his partners ball for what year they met, because it had to be 6 for 2022. Like, I can't wait for the untold story in 10 years where they explain how, like, nobody knew each other. Not nobody, but, like, I just am very interested in some of these casting decisions, including, as you mentioned, the decision for Casey and her brother to leave and 2 alternates to come in. Like, could they not decide, like, Olivia and Horatio and Nam and his celebrity Big Brother person were so compelling that they had to bring them both in, but neither of them on the original cast?
Yeah, that to me screams like they're like, their flights were delayed, or they had like passport visa issues, or like there was something going on that they couldn't get into the country and they were just late. Because that makes no sense that it was just randomly like, oh, I'm feeling generous, I'm gonna bring in 2 teams. That's crazy. They had to be in the mix and something else was going on, at least one of them. Like, they were supposed to be there for day one and were just delayed, and they got them in there by the time for the daily, and then COVID happened, or maybe their quarantine was delayed. There had to be something that caused this delay. It wasn't just, oh, because Casey had to be sent home, we're bringing in 2 more teams. They were already in the mix.
See, my best guess would be, because the 4 of them scream alternate. Like, if I had to cast alternates, those would be my top four draft picks. Like, so my only guess would be, like, and I don't know why Casey and Kenny had to leave. So it definitely seems like COVID when the
way TJ sort of said. Devin did confirm it was COVID. That's what he said. Someone asked him, like, oh, what happened? He was like, oh, it was COVID. There you go.
So my thought is they're like, you know what? Put the two teams in now in case we have to pull somebody else later. And like, let's put all the alternates we have. Like, I could see a world where they're like, we have two teams of alternates. And if COVID's like breaking out right now, put everyone we got in case we have to pull four more teams.
And then wouldn't it make more sense? I feel like that would make more sense to keep some more isolated, right? Because if you just drop them all in the mix, then you're just risking everyone getting COVID. You need at least some backups.
I was thinking more from like whenever they leave, does it become too late to introduce new people? I don't know when is the latest they would bring in an alternate, but obviously we're just speculating. I have no idea. Bummer for Casey, and really bummer for Nani, because I was coming into the season like, if Nani can't win this season, partnered with Bananas, with no like real male equivalent competitor for him, like no real foil in Wes or CT, and her girlfriend, love of her life, also on the show on a different team, then and Nani can never win. If she doesn't,
I think she was pretty close with Kayla also. I mean, Kayla's gone now, but I think they were pretty close the last time they've done a season together. Sort of had even another friend.
So Nani, at least by Casey leaving, saves face, because I was prepared to come on here and say if Nani doesn't win the season, she should retire because she can't win then.
We got one more season from Nani. Right. One more. Nelson's toast was something else, huh? I wrote it all down because it was just so preposterous. You know, I can read it because it was. First, he starts with the here he. I mean, alcohol was strongly involved at the start, but he goes, "If you made it here, you're here to play. But can you really play? We will find out as the game moves on. But has it really begun? Yes, it has. Put your drink in the air. Let's go." That was the toast. It was one of those things where I feel like in an essay where you're trying to sound super smart and like posing questions and trying to sound like philosophical, and then you read it to yourself and you like realize you're like just like babbled on for like 30 seconds. You have no idea what you said. This was a preposterous speech. And I mean, look, clearly he didn't do any prep and just winged it. So I can't give him too much heat for that. But I don't know how Nelson got the call. Where's like Devin to get the speech? I feel like he would have been a lot better.
See, that's interesting. I was thinking, like, is Nelson the most senior guy there? Like, because this was given.
Yeah, for guys, I would imagine, right? I mean, Laurel would be the most senior for the women. I think Nelson started before Devin.
This is giving, like, you're at work and somebody's like, Nelson, you're going to present to the client. And Nelson's like, what are you talking about? Like, I just started. And then he looks around and is like, oh my God, I've been here the longest of this team. Shit, when did that happen? Like, that was like, it, like, and also he thinks like Darrell and Bananas are going to be there. And then it's like, oh wait, I'm the most senior person who showed up today. I guess I get to make the decision. But 10 out of 10 for enthusiasm. The key to a good speech at a drinking event is just scream at the indicated time when people are supposed to cheers, and you know he did that.
Yeah, look, if you don't know what to say, keep it short, and yeah, and then get everyone cheering at the end, and that worked out. So, yeah, maybe not run it back next season, but for his one and done, not too bad.
What did you think of the challenge for the this being the first getting to know you challenge?
Yeah, I mean, so bolas for blood? Is that what is a bola? I mean, it's just a ball,
you
right?
Okay. You good?
This felt very Are You the One-ish. The way they used to do those weird challenges back in the day where it's like, oh, learn your partner before you go on a date. It felt like that. And I don't mean that in a good way for the challenge. Like, it was very odd. It wasn't very physical. It wasn't very tiring. For the first challenge, I expected more for a challenge premiere daily.
It's interesting. I didn't hate it, especially after watching. I totally get what you're saying, but, and it was sort of my instinct too. And then after watching, not like having been primed by watching how the challenges used to be on the Untold Story over the last couple weeks, it was like the Untold Story kind of tempered my expectations of like, wait a minute, like these challenges didn't used to be like the most insane, crazy thing. And like, maybe it is okay to just have, considering they have 300 people, like jump in the pit, non-physical, but still physical, and a little beep, boop, and you're done. Like, I was like, okay, this is fine. But I agree with Kayla and Sam that it's not like dispositive that Johnny and Raven are these like huge physical dominating threats.
No, totally. And honestly, like, I would be fine with the show. I just think for the premiere, you know, crank it up. Like, I think if you're going to use like your crazy, like fire budget and stuff like that, like use it for the premiere daily. Like that's where it's like make your big showcase. And then this is like an episode 3 or 4 daily when you want to like calm things down a little bit. And, you know, you just want to like phone one in. Like that's fine to like do early on. But I just felt like for the premiere, you know, give us the escapade, give us like a high tower to jump off, give us something else to do, like a big set piece or something like that. It felt a little flat.
Totally fair. If I can give credit where it's due, I will say when there are 300 people on the cast, I'm grateful I didn't have to watch 500 heats. That's not good math. 150 heats. So there's that. But yeah, certainly no one's going to be talking about this challenge next week or even remembering it.
No, this will not make the challenge documentary part 2. This they won't be doing. Remember that time we did the Bullish challenge in the, you know, Ride or Dies? That was we had to do a whole segment on that one.
Here's something that might make the documentary. Brian, your biggest falling out that is inevitably coming with challenge stats, because you are taking credit for amplifying challenge stats that in such a way that it made air. Is that I'm willing to take that official position.
I am taking some credit. I feel like my years in the challenge streets, I feel like I've garnered enough of a little bit of a spotlight that I could help raise attention to it. I think challenge stats was already on the rise. I think he was gaining notoriety when this came out. And I think I helped escalate that a little bit. So I will give myself like 20% credit, 25% credit of hamming this home. I think the repeated mentions, like I had very clever tweets that we bring it up a lot of times to give myself some credit. So I'll give myself some partial credit. And I'm taking this as a big dub that this came on in the premiere, because that means they've all been talking about this all. Because I mean, the last challenge season was back in December, so this was like floating around in the challenge Twitter streets for, you know, 8 months now. So the fact that it was brought up episode 1 is just top of the mind for everyone. It's top of the mind for the producers when they asked Nelson the question. Top of the mind for Devin when he brought it up. So I am going to give myself some credit for this.
Did you ask Devin if you could take credit for this? Has Devin confirmed, like, the COVID outbreak that took out Casey and her brother?
So he definitely confirmed. He was like, yeah, challenge stats I saw is the best. Like, they're challenge analytics. Like, he was fully confirming. And I feel like that's what they call them, challenge analytics. And he recognized, it's always weird. He, like, he knew who I was, but I don't know how he knew who I was. I don't think I've ever met him. But he was like, oh, hey, good seeing you again. I don't think I've ever met him. Maybe we've interacted. We didn't interview him, right? For Are You the One, or did we?
Ryan. Please
say
I don't know. Okay. I don't know that. Oh, so no, this is interesting. So you're taking credit for amplifying challenge stats, not necessarily amplifying the Nelson fact of it.
Oh, no, because I didn't come up with it. Absolutely not. This is all challenge stats.
But you're saying that you elevated challenge stats into a different tier of recognition such that the Nelson fact could be gleaned and attached to for this show. I'm not making sense. This is interesting. Yeah. I love it. I love it for you. Why not?
I think if so. Not you, then I think who? So. Right.
Why not take credit for reading somebody else's work and saying it louder? I love it.
Is that right, all straight white men do? Straight white men. That's our specialty, right? So there we go.
Listen, a lot of people do it. I'm willing to take credit for your credit. How about that?
Like, I'm only asking for 20%. I'm not asking for the full bonus and race.
I take 20% of your 25%.
All right, perfect. Slipping it off. You want a royalty also? Kevin O'Leary here?
Regardless, very exciting information. We finally get Nelson's official response. And it's what's so great about it is, much like me, he takes 2,000 words to say absolutely nothing to address it.
It's incredible. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how you're supposed to answer that. Yeah, I've sucked for a very long time. I don't know what else you could possibly say. But it was a good spin zone. It was like, oh, I don't even need it. Or like, it was like smart to not be in power. It was a very good like spin zone for Nelson to try to pull it off.
Yeah, and the fact that we get the edit like kind of blaming the fact that the only reason that Nelson loses is because he doesn't remember his own age. That's a tough one.
Yeah, look, it's the cherry on top of the sundae for his 52nd straight loss. It's crazy. It's unbelievable. Doesn't know his age. What can he do?
No, but I love the challenge. Like, much like we said, we like the admission that the game starts before the game, and I Googled the player and we made out on the plane. Now we're like commenting on our own stats and making fun of ourselves. Like that is fun. This is the spirit of the challenge. We love to see it.
Yeah. So do you think this will be a recurring thing now? Do you think they'll bring it up every time? And so like, do you think then if he wins, will it be like a grand thing where TJ's is like, oh my God, you finally won? Or do you think this like, will they, this be a recurring thing through the season?
Here's what I want to happen. Every daily loss, they have my permission to put a quick little Nelson sad counter on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's not acknowledge it. I don't want a confessional mm-hmm. every single week talking about it. I'm happy to have a little counter. And then they can make some fanfare when he wins. But they yep. will kill it if...
Agree.
They should learn from the great originators of it, you and Challenge Stats. You know, equally. No, but you and Challenge, like the way you talk about it, the way we talk about it here, the way Challenge, like, you're not beating it to death. It's still fresh. It's still interesting. Mm-hmm. I hope they don't ruin it. It's like when your mom starts making the joke, not your mom, your mom's great, but when right. somebody else's mom starts like using the slang and you're like, oh, this isn't cool anymore.
Yeah. Like, yeah, when Nelson forgets his birthday and screws up a deal, that's the perfect time to re bring it up. Like, that's a great moment. But yeah, I love the idea of the counter. That would be great. I hope he wins one. It would be very exciting to see if he could pull it off. I'm sure he would do something like when he was in power to like totally screw up his game, which would make it even funnier. But I'm rooting for him. I want to see it happen.
One thing, when we found out that there were going to be four ride or dies that go to plead their case, my immediate reaction was like, oh, great. We're extending the worst part of any challenge. Yeah, I mean,
the tribunals. Extending it.
But I do like, I already said, I like the name of the zone. You know, then we get like some pretty standard, but I thought really interesting first episode strategizing.
Yeah, and we even got, like, after what happened with Challenge USA, we even got some like just old school classics, just going out partying vibes. Like, we had like a slow motion of like Tommy being like lifted up, and even just fun things happening that we just never really saw on Challenge USA. So it was good to be reminded of like that part of the challenge proper that could be brought in that we didn't see. That was like, oh yeah, these people like go out and drink and have fun, and things could escalate from there. But it was good to get back into that part of the world and to see the strategizing happening in this arena.
Yeah, I agree. I have to say my heart was warmed when Amber is like having this like confident moment with Chauncey and being like,
mm-hmm.
I'm the only woman he looks at. You could be all with him, whatever. And like, Amber has struggled, despite having won the challenge, she has really struggled with alliances and friendships in the house. So like, she almost more than anybody is really, I think, going to benefit from having like a true ride or die, like not some random person who was also on a show, but like her boyfriend, I think is going to be like huge for her game. So that was a nice, like, heartwarming moment for her.
Yeah, look, I think Amber falling in with Jay, Michelle, and the rookies is a perfect spot for her. Yeah, I think she's been looking for a home for a couple seasons now, to like her own detriment of like trying to continually go back with the Big Brother people, even if there was like abundantly clear that they didn't want to work with her. So now that she could like fully put that to bed and move on and find like a good new crew, is great. And I even love that it kind of started up again like old school challenge style, just based off the room they were in, right? Like Johnny, Jay. And it was Johnny, Jay, and someone else were all in the same room together, and they're like, oh yeah, like we should just like do this, we should ride this out together. I love seeing like how the rooms form is how alliances form, which is kind of how it used to be, or how you strategically put yourself in certain rooms. So I love seeing that come back again. Because I feel like in other seasons, we've had like the bunkers and things are much more open. This is bringing back to like what the challenge, how alliances do form. And I'm glad to see that back.
Agreed. My first reaction to Jay, Chauncey, Johnny, and Turbo in a room was like, this is an insane choice. Like, what a terrible room for Jay to be in. And then it turns out to be like a great room for the way the game is going to go, at least after episode one. So I'm willing to eat crow on that.
And it really seems like Jay and Michelle are going to be like focal points. I mean, Michelle got the first confessional. They were big narrators throughout the whole episode. I also love that. I think they started doing this with Bananas and Wes, right? Where I think it's going to continue throughout the season with all the pairs, but I love the paired confessionals. I love that it's not just one of them individually. I love that a lot of the times it's both of them. Because even in other like rivals or types of things like that, we never really had them together doing confessionals. And I love seeing them both there in the spot for all the pairs.
Yeah. Speaking of Michelle's first confessional, did the show open a little weird to you? Not that Michelle's confessional is weird, but it almost like started with no, like I almost didn't know the show had started. This is a stupid thing to go back to now, but it almost felt like it ended where like it was like a half started. Who cares? Pretend I didn't acknowledge that. Here's a question. What did you think of Johnny and Raven's strategy? I mean, we know it ends up getting a little funky, but how would you grade their approach to power?
I thought their thought process was perfect. I think coming in as rookies, like what they said was accurate. Like the veterans, I mean, we just saw like, what was it, last season or two seasons ago, where it was like the full vet alliance that took control of the game for the first, I don't know, 8-9 weeks or whatever it was. So you absolutely have to come in and at least get a few rookies on your side. And I think you have to make the right shot at a vet. And I honestly thought going after Kayla might have been the wrong move because of what she said, where she's like, I don't really have anyone in the house. So I think she could have been a perfect person to kind of fall in with the rookies. But then based off of her confessional, when Sam was like, should we work with them? And she was like, hell no, no, no way in hell. Then like, okay, then actually, yeah, they did make the right move. Because I thought Kayla would have been the perfect one to kind of slide in with Amber and Jay and Michelle in like that new vet / rookie crew. But she wanted no part of it. So they absolutely made the right decision with who they targeted.
Yeah. If their method was, we want to bring people in who we're going to make deals with and use it as leverage. Great idea. I think Laurel and Kayla are the wrong people to do that with. I think Tori and Devin are people who I think would be very receptive to that kind of thing and would potentially be likely to honor it. And it's hard for Johnny and Raven to know that. They don't strike me as people who know anything about the challenge. But it did not surprise me in the slightest that Kayla was like, no, F them. We're not going to honor the deal. At the same time, to be easier on Johnny and Raven, we know that this doesn't matter. Like, yeah, all else equal, they'll honor a deal if they can. But if they want to throw you in, they'll use you nominating them at all as a reason if you're the person they want to target. So I liked how much effort they were putting into the thought process behind it, even if it probably won't matter. What I liked about the move of Kayla and Sam is, to your point, yes, they're probably vulnerable and like need to make deals. But at the same time, because they're not connected to anybody else, in the event they go home, who's pissed? Like it's a shot at the vets, but it's not like really a shot at the vets. So you're not really like upsetting the apple cart if they don't come back.
Yeah. And I think sparing Laurel is like a good move. I kind of like the idea of like kind of putting her up and being like, no, I'm not going to take the shot at you. Because I think, and Laurel said she like, you know, she goes based off performance. And I think showing you can you win one, I think already notches you up a little bit in her eyes. And then sparing her, I think will help you a little bit down the road. So I don't think it was that bad of a choice. I think throwing in Laurel in this spot would be a very bad choice because she is, of all the people, one of the people who would most hold a grudge. I think we've seen that from her. So I think the idea of trying to like spare her a little bit, I do think could help them out, especially because, again, they showed they can win. If they win again, Laurel always tries to like go with people who are stronger and winning because she knows if she gets to the end, she can win. So she wants to find that crew. So showing you can win, I think, will also help kind of ingratiate yourself with her.
Yeah, no, agreed. And the other thing I liked about ultimately going for Kayla and Sam is, like, who's most likely to win a daily and win the elimination, come back and win a daily? I would put Kayla and Sam three out of the three of the possible teams, veterans that they could have put in.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're also, it's still a shot. They're not slouches. It's still like a competitive team you're getting rid of, but certainly not a team that's guaranteed to win the next elimination if they do happen to survive and have power to take you out.
Mm-hmm. And look, as they saw, you know, you don't really know how the first one's going to go down. You don't know, like, even if you lose, maybe TJ brings up like a redemption house time. You don't know what's on the table. So I think like a middle of the road shot at a target is kind of like the perfect thing to do in the first week.
And kudos to them, because if I'm being honest, the second they put in Hansel and Gretel, what's their names?
Kim and Colleen,
that I was like, oh, cut to them chickening out and putting in the rookies that they don't have a relationship with. So I was like impressed that they really followed through on this shot, because it would have been very defensible and easy, and you've seen it a million times, for the rookies to eat each other. So mad respect to them for like actually taking the shot.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And so you like the zone? I find it a little corny. You like the zone?
I love the zone.
You love it.
I love when TJ said, see you in the zone, like get in the zone, auto zone. I loved it.
I like the color scheme of this season. I like the purple and goldish type, and it's like glowing a little bit. It's a appealing scheme. It works well.
Yeah, it's giving like laser tag, and I feel like the zone is like part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I like how it's like, better than the highlighted or whatever the hell it's been, like defensive like terms.
Mm-hmm.
Gulag, like it's worse.
Gotta cancel that one. That's always been my favorite word, but you gotta cancel that one. What did you think of the elimination? You move, I move.
Just like that.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it. I thought it was really made for Devin. And that's before I knew about his coffee table.
Very funny. Yeah. Very, very much like a Survivor challenge, right? Like this is exactly like if you shrink this down and you're holding at the handlebars, like if they did done the exact challenge of Survivor, they might do it next week, honestly. But I feel like they do this type of thing like every season. So this is like very much like a challengey size version of like a Survivor challenge.
Yeah, I thought it was a new twist on a classic idea. I liked how much communication mattered. If that's the theme we're gonna be beaten over the head with, like ride or dies, you gotta communicate. I don't think it reflects at all on Sam and Kayla's marriage. That I think a big advantage, almost a bigger advantage, at least in the early stage while they remain ride or dies. We'll see what happens. It's a bigger advantage, I think, to be working with someone you've worked with on the challenge before versus a Chauncey and an Amber and a Kayla and Sam. Because you could be married and have great communication and then throw Brian and Emily up on this maze and like who knows what would happen.
Right. No, absolutely. You want the experience of doing these types of things, not just the experience of just talking to each other. The former trumps the latter, 100%, for sure.
But yeah, and I think Kayla and Sam, well, I have like Mandela effect that Sam and Kayla have been on the challenge together before. Like I like kept thinking Sam's been on the challenge before. But otherwise, like, and I like Kayla, but besides the rookie team with the mall, I was the least upset to see Kayla and Sam go. I would have been much more upset to lose Tori and Devin and Laurel and
Totally. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Of those picks, definitely losing Kayla is the most tolerable. I did enjoy Sam. I thought he was pretty funny. They had a funny rapport where especially I love he called her out like, oh, I guess you're just like used to losing. That was very funny. And TJ's goodbye to them was he got a nice chuckle saying he hopes their marriage lasts longer than their time on the challenge. TJ coming with the hard jokes in episode one. Very enjoyable, both of those.
Yeah, I'm excited. Look, I got this a great first episode. I'm excited. We needed this. This is huge. We needed it after the Challenge USA. So I'm excited to see what the season brings. In the like preview, which I try not to watch so closely, and I try not to retain anything, which is not hard.
Mm-hmm.
They show Casey. Now that was just sloppy, right? Like Casey is not coming back, is she?
That would be pretty wild. has anyone ever been like DQ'd for and then come back? I mean, people have been eliminated and come back. I don't think I've ever seen someone be sent home from a medical thing and come back.
Yeah,
it was weird. I feel like in the before that, like the season preview, I feel like she popped up a lot, which is why I was like very confused. But I mean, they must have just showed the night one scenes a lot. I thought I saw her doing stuff, so maybe she does come back. That'd be crazy.
crazy.
I mean, look, the challenge does weird stuff. So I mean, they're just, you know, 2-for-1 swaps, bringing people in. It's weird. It's gonna be weird. You know, there's what, 16 teams right now. It's gonna be 16 for the next like 3 weeks. So buckle up.
Speaking of weird, let's get weird. We have to start our inaugural drinking game rules.
Yes. Did you have anything top of mind?
Yeah. So I have two, but I'm not going to add both. Do you think I should add a rule that will come up a lot, or a rule that might be more unique?
I think for the first one, do the one that comes up a lot, so we have like a recurring thing through the season.
I kind of wanted to do the other one.
That's what I meant. I said do the one that's more unique. That like will be like a ooh ah moment.
No. I'll stick with the setup one, the broader one. Anytime we get a double confessional, two people in the confessional at the same time.
Wait, that's the one that's going to come up a lot, right?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. That's very good. That's good. I'm going to say anytime we see, anytime people question if their ride or die is a ride or die, if there's maybe just dying, not as much riding in a ride or die pair.
So, for example, in Michelle's confessional, when she's like in the preview, if the person I love the most doesn't ride for me, who's riding for me?
Perfect example. That's exactly what caused me to think about that. even like her being like, when she was talking about the problem that between her and Jay interrupts her, and she's like, this is like our problem. You know, we have no communication. Things like that. Strife between the ride or dies, the questioning the more the die-ness than the ride-ness.
All right, we don't have to question our ride or dies. Thank you to the people who closed out last season with some 5-star reviews. If you want to start our season off strong, you can go to robinswebsite.com/bippity-boppity-boo. What is
challenge
it?
Feed.
Challenge feed. Subscribe. Leave us reviews. Thank you to Sumi. S-U-E. Is that your mom? I don't know. Buckner, W-H, and Drunk Nephew. Hopefully more Brian yelling to come on this season. Thank you.
Hopefully not. No. Hopefully not. Hopefully nothing brings me to be as upset about that as anything like that. So
it's a win-win. Keep it clean.
That's true. Well, was it? I don't know. I think there was some lose in there. I don't think it was a full win-win.
We wanted to talk about the Challenge Untold story. It's late. One thing I will say, watch it. If you were on the fence, if you were like, oh, it's 6 episodes, like I almost was like, oh, I'll get to it. And I had to get to it for the podcast. And we didn't do the podcast, but I loved it. Pure bliss. I understand now why sports fans watch clips of highlights from like seasons past. It was so, so good.
No, it was fantastic. It was super well done. So much more well done than I thought it would be. It was like super professional. I mean, I think this is like insulting the challenge now, but it was like really cool. They got a lot of people to come back and do interviews. Obviously, they like skewed the interviews a little bit more towards people who are going to be on this season, and like didn't bring as many old school people to be back for interviews. Like to see, like it was more skewing towards like the newer school people, but that's okay. I like they look back at a lot of old clips, which was cool. I did learn some things, like I think it was what World of Worlds 1 or 2. Like the entire elimination set was flooded, and I had to like scramble to make a whole new one like the day before. That was incredible to learn about. A lot of fun backstory stuff that popped up along the way.
I agree. I was like, oh, it's only people who have been on All Stars or current seasons. Then when Julie came out in like the second to last part, I was like, damn, they got Julie, they got Tara. Like, they did get a lot of people. It's just like deeper cuts later on, for sure. And then Shout out to Sydney Buxbaum, who is a Northwestern alum, friend of Johnny Langan, who literally wrote the book on the challenge. It's coming out, mm-hmm. the challenge. I was going to say Challenge Untold Story. That's not what it's called. But they had some really interesting, Sydney was on, and they had some other really interesting, like, people who have covered, journalists who have covered the challenge beat for years. And that was cool mm-hmm. to see. I loved when Sydney talked about, like, the ranking of the best challenge contestants and how that got her into hot water. And, like, the people on the challenge were like, how dare you?
Mm-hmm.
As people who cover the challenge, it's extremely relatable content.
Yeah. I even just like a very, this is like a subtle, not a subtle thing, because they did it throughout, but I love, like, the way they would do the, going through times, like they would show like things that popping up in social media or in like pop culture, and like the timestamp it along the way. I enjoyed that type of stuff. Yeah, even just like the set and the way they would like zoom in on the interviews, it was very much like a 30 for 30, like the ESPN documentary. So it really hit. It was, I mean, even like the six episodes, they broke them up in their each own way. It wasn't just like a start to finish life cycle of the challenge. Like the first two were more like that, and then the next four were kind of like tackling different topics, which I thought was really cool to kind of break it up in different ways.
Yeah, 10 out of 10. And, you know, if we have a slow episode, we could go back and talk more about it. But the book, I just wanted to plug. I haven't read it. I plan to read it. This is not an official plug. I just think this is the audience for it. How to Win at the Challenge and Life, A Champion's Guide to Eliminating Obstacles, Winning Friends, and Making That Money.
What a world.
What a world that has come out of this challenge.
It's still so bizarre that it dropped like now before season 38. I mean, I guess they wanted to do it like after the USA thing, like breaking the CBS. That was pretty big to have it be there, but it's just like a odd time to just do it now before like season 38. You would think maybe just wait till season 40. I think that would have been more, you know, grandioso to do it like that. But hey, I mean, like you said, it was great. So maybe I'll just rewatch it again before season 40.
It is interesting, this my tinfoil hat, like, it was filmed a long time ago. Cam hadn't had the baby. Like, a lot of stuff was, like, a little bit old. And then they just, like, shoehorned in the CBS thing. And I was like, I wonder if this was supposed to drop before. And then they were like, let's cleanse the palate. Drop it right after.
The one thing that was pretty, the one thing that I thought was really glaring was the fact that Cara Maria just, like, was not there. Like, the fact that she was talked about so much, the fact that Paulie was there, like, who said no? Like, was she not asked, or did she say no to being interviewed?
Listen,
you think? I know you don't know.
I don't see why she wouldn't be asked and Paulie would. I could see a world where she says no and Paulie wouldn't say no to anything.
Yeah. I mean, look, it honestly made me miss both of them. Like, I feel like we both have come to the agreement that like we're both ready for Cara to come back, and I feel like this season in particular like would have been so perfect for her and Paulie to be on. I feel like they would have added so much. So
whoa! I'm not ready for Paulie to be back.
No, we're both ready for Cara to come back, but then like for her to come back, I would assume she'd only do it with Paulie at this point. So like for this season, it would have been perfect for them to come back as a pair.
I am not co-signing that. I am willing to say that I would want Cara back, but if she will only come back with Paulie, then I'm happy to never see her back again.
Okay.
And I was actually surprised that they asked Paulie to. I think you're more likely. Your scenario is more likely. I was quite surprised to see Paulie participating.
Yeah,
in the,
I was very surprised.
Reflection.
I mean, he was only on like two seasons, three seasons. I mean, no, he was like a big part of those seasons, but I mean, wasn't like some big character along the way.
One thing that's interesting is like the challenge has no problem grappling with like CT's like storied past, like I'll eat your face, I'll eat your smash your head and eat it, like that, you know, being eliminated for violence and like brought back. But and I'm not saying they should talk about it or shouldn't talk about it, I'm just observing, is like the challenge has had a number of people who will never be back, who have done some vile things, some racist things, harassment, blah blah blah, the list goes on. And I almost like wish there was a way to like the CT story is easy to address because it was like an angry man who reformed, not in small part because of his journey on the challenge. And now like look at his amazing life and he's so beloved and everybody loves him. It's harder to talk about people who have no longer have the show had to cut ties with and to like address that with the negative, the end of the story being, and we never heard from that racist person again. But I do wish there was like an interesting way to discuss how the challenge has both pushed society and pushed what contestants can or should be in terms of like having non-binary and transgender contestants on before like any other show is doing that. And then also the ways that they've, their contestants have failed in, being good people. Like, I wish that was like addressed a little bit, and it wasn't at all.
I mean, I totally agree. I mean, like, they wouldn't even mention Kenny's name. Like, they said Wes's partner, like, when it came up with them being paired together. So, like, they really cut that out. And it was just super bizarre to have, like, this whole segment on Jordan. And they, like, kind of talk, like, oh, he's, like, a, you know, rough around the edges or whatever term they use. Like just dive in. Like you said, like, they do a lot of things. Like, they really, like, highlighted things they've done well over the years, as they should. It's, like, their documentary. But don't be afraid to show the three steps forward, but also, like, the step or two back. That, like, and then, like, the progress you're trying to, like, show along the way, or the progress they're making along the way. I don't care. Like, just show something. Just to have, like, this whole 10-minute segment on Jordan and make it mostly a positive thing, and don't really touch at all on the reason why he's been gone for a couple seasons, and some people don't think he should be back, and things like that. And just, like, dive into it. Like, we're not going to blame the show in this moment. Just, like, talk about, like, what has happened. Like, I mean, the challenge has been on for 38 seasons. You're going to have some controversy along the way. It's not gonna be a perfect show. Like, it's fine to, like, address it and, like, be like, okay, yeah, like, you know, we just great strides. We saw, like, this great heartwarming stuff with, like, Anissa coming out, and we're like, how, you know, impactful that was, and things like that. But also, don't be afraid to show how many things you screwed up on along the way. I think it would make it much more real.
Yeah, Jordan is definitely a great example of that. It felt strange to have that not acknowledged. And maybe the concern there is, like, the show doesn't want to decide that he has a redemption arc. Like, everybody has just universally decided that we're excusing CT's behavior in the early days, and, like, now, like, what a growth arc. And like you're saying, people are justifiably not as quick to decide that Jordan is worthy of the redemption that he's gotten. So maybe they're like, by not talking about it, we're not suggesting that he's transcended it. But I don't think not talking about it does that.
Yeah, but then bring up someone that's, like, never, like, bring up, like, the Camilla stuff. Like, she's never going to be back on. Like, if you want to, like, scapegoat her as, like, the one person you're going to talk about for some of the vile stuff that she did, like, just, like, bring something up about, like, the bad things that have happened along the way. I mean, you had Leroy there. Like, Leroy, if he wanted to, he can, like, talk about his side of it and, like, try, like, go into, like, a little bit more detail. Like, they had opportunities with the people involved to talk about some of the bad, horrible stuff that has happened. And it just, I mean, look, I get they wanted to make it, like, more a rosy story of the show, but, you know, there's been some controversy along the way. Like, don't, like, hide completely from it.
Interesting about the Jordan segment, too. It blew my mind that one of the, like, producers says, like, we didn't consider how Jordan would be able to do a challenge. Like, we just sit in a room and decide the challenges, and then Jordan just has to deal with it. Like, I know that that's, like, what we see, but I couldn't have imagined that they're not even considering how somebody with a physical difference is, like, well, if you can't do it, you can't do it. Like, they're so lucky that it's Jordan and not anybody else. Like, it's irresponsible to not be considering your contestants.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I look, if it was anyone other than Jordan, they wouldn't, like, be good enough to do this type of stuff, right? Like, the reason why, like, if Jordan can still do it is because he's just so freakishly good at so much stuff that he can, like, overcome it. Like, most people, I feel like, wouldn't be able to even reach that level that he can do to, like, be in the position to do this stuff, you know? So, like, they can do it. It's like, yeah, it's tough. It was crazy to hear them say it out loud. Like, yeah, we don't really think about it. We just kind of create stuff, and then we watch Jordan win no matter what, even when, like, they're holding, there was the one thing they showed where he was holding, like, the beam, and he was just, like, putting it behind his back, and they were like, I can't believe he's doing this. And yeah, it's crazy.
And then I know I said we're not going to talk, but the only thing I am pissed about is,
yeah, like, we're here.
Why on earth do we have the Ashley Hunter segment as, like, one of the final biggest moments ever? And the Banana Sarah moment is, like, talked about in like a totally different way in context. Only TJ equates them and is like, I thought bananas was disgusting. And then I was like, damn, Ashley, good for you. Like, I just think the treatment, the like official treatment of them as different scenarios really pissed me off.
Yeah, I was very surprised to see how, like, that was like the, usually what they would do is they would pick like a big moment to start the episode and then come back to it at the end. I was like surprised to see how focused they were on the Ashley Hunter thing. Maybe just because of Hunter's reaction and like how loud and like crying and like a lot of production comments about it, so like they had even more backstory to go into it. But yeah, I was very surprised to see how MTV handled those two things. But of course, CJ would, you know, give the proper reaction to it in good TJ form. And the segment about him coming back before Rivals was there was a bit of a tear shed in the Cohen household when that was going on.
Oh my God, so many tears. I was crying about DM. I was crying. Like, people need to watch it. It was worth every minute, I think.
The night stuff, too. I didn't expect the night stuff to get me, but even like the segment on him was like super sad.
And it is just so interesting because Jemmy, I mean, people deal with differently. And Jemmy talks about it in the segment where she's like, it's just so important for me to talk about him and keep his stories alive. And like, that's how I grieve. And as they say, CT has never publicly spoken about Diem,
yeah,
and he's on a different journey with it. And watching him like break down, be unable to speak about it and walk out was like just brutal.
It's yeah. I mean, it said all you needed to say, really. But yeah, it's, you know, they are both handling it very differently, obviously.
Speaking of handling things differently, I want to end with a little social media.
Oh.
Because I found this so repulsive that I screenshotted it. When did I screenshot it? Wednesday at 9:05 p.m.
Is it going to be Stephen Fishback bringing up the Challenge USA finale like 6 weeks after it happened to remind all of us?
No, I live for that, obviously.
Okay.
It's Johnny Bananas tweeting, this looks like a job for Captain Save a Show. Bananas emoji, shield emoji. And then tweeting out merchandise that he has Captain Save a Show. And then Josh Martinez wrote, Kris Jenner works hard, but Bananas works harder, which I thought was funny and saved the tweet. But, like, I get the bravado. I get it. I understand. Good for you. But I just don't like the attitude of, like, acting like the show went to shit while you were gone. Guess what? Nevertheless, we persisted. We've survived, and we've had good television since you've been gone. Great, you're back. Probably too soon, honestly, considering your retirement. It was bullshit. But you're back. Okay, you're back. Come back with a reverence for the show that you left and respect. I really don't, and I get it. It's schtick, and it'll sell t-shirts. But I hate the attitude of, like, looks like this is a job for me since you deadbeats weren't able to. Oh, like, look at this motley crew you've assembled, TJ. Yeah. Like, I really hope Bananas gets his ass kicked. I don't think it's likely, but I hope it happens.
Yeah, I'll be very curious to see how he assimilates into this crew, who bands together with him, who goes after him. Yeah, I'd be very interested to see come next week immediately. Is he in the group of four? Does he just immediately win? I mean, you know, he's obviously going to be talked about the most. I'm sure he's going to be top confessional guy. He's going to take over the episode next week. So wherever he goes and lands is going to be where next week and probably the next couple weeks goes and lands.
That's all I have.
There you go.
Literally.
We will be back.
Emotionally, mentally, and with respect to the show.
Ride or dies, though. Should be a fun year. I think it'll be good. I'm excited. We'll be back next week, episode 2. You can follow me on Twitter at @CohenBryan_. You can follow you
at @LastTweets.
We'll be back next week for episode 2. Until then, have a good one.